This is Webhack Wednesday, episode 8.
Hello and welcome to Webhack Wednesday. I'm Martin Beebe.
And I'm Martin Kern.
Today we're going to be talking about requests and middleware in ASP.NET Core 1.
Middleware?
Ah. Did you mishear in our production meeting?
Yeah, when we had the production meeting earlier on, I thought you said Middle Earth.
Middle Earth, okay.
So I've prepared a backdrop of...
Oh, we're in Middle Earth.
Yeah. I need to confess something. It's not actually Middle Earth.
Right.
It's Worcestershire.
Yep.
Because J.R.R. Tolkien, the guy that wrote all the Lord of the Rings stuff, he's from Worcestershire, and Worcestershire actually inspired the Middle Earth.
Worcestershire, for those that don't know, for American audience, that is a... Droitwich Spa, your place of...
We've talked about Droitwich Spa a lot. That's in Worcestershire.
And this is yet another way of you getting Droitwich Spa into our episode, is it?
I'm not being paid either. And that's why they call it the Shire, because it's Worcestershire.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
See? There we go. You didn't know that.
I've learned about Harry Potter and Tolkien in the last few weeks.
I mean, who knows where we're going to go from here.
Yeah.
We're in Worcestershire now, so let's enjoy.
Well, let's start talking about ASP.NET middleware.
Let's do that. It seems appropriate to do that.
So the place I wanted to start was a blog post by the guys which build Age of Ascent. So this is the Age of Ascent blog. I think it's Iliad Games is the company which is behind this. We know a little bit about Age of Ascent because we were beta test. Well, I was beta test.
Yeah, I was as well, actually, yeah.
So they had this... Age of Ascent game, and they're trying to build this mega online multiplayer game, and we did some early beta testing with it and stuff. Anyway, it's the game is built on ASP.NET, the background stuff running on it. It's also running on Azure and using Azure services, and they are sort of early adopters, I guess, of ASP.NET Core.
Right.
And they just reported on their blog the fact that ASP.NET Core is 2,300%. It has 2,300% more requests served per second. So this is kind of showing that ASP.NET Core can handle far more requests per second than previous versions of ASP.NET.
So 2,300.
It's an awful lot, isn't
it? That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's like
if I can't even remember what's the runner, which is really fast.
Usain Bolt.
Can you imagine how fast he would be if he was 2,300?
You couldn't even measure it.
Like, no, that would be a lot, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It'd be like milliseconds. I mean, imagine if I was 2,000% faster than I am now.
You would just
I'd be faster than Usain Bolt.
By a fraction.
As it currently is. Yeah.
You could just about do it.
That's how big a number we're talking here.
Yeah, it's a lot. So 2,300% is a lot.
In anybody's
money, yeah. So that's how much faster ASP.NET Core is than ASP.NET 4.6, which it actually makes it one of the fastest web frameworks on the planet.
Known to man,
yeah. I don't know.
Certainly one of the fastest ones in Worcestershire.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely true enough. This thing, it goes on about talking about ASP.NET Core and how what that means for games like Age of Ascent, because they have to think about lots of scale and obviously the amount of requests they can handle is really important. That 1.15 million requests per second, which is what they've reached, so over a million requests per second, is what they've reached. It's kind of like a benchmark, a performance benchmark that they use, and lots of other frameworks use to sort of determine how fast stuff is. It's actually a bit of a strange benchmark because it's really only showing sort of how quick it can respond to basic HTTP requests and giving really base responses. But it's still, it's worthy of a cake, exactly. But it's also the cool thing about this blog post is it does explain some of the business benefits for games like this, and it shows you all of the different things and how they got to that. And the other thing which it talks about a little bit is Ben Adams, who works for Iliad Games and the Age of Ascent game. He's actually one of the major contributors to ASP.NET Core, the Kestrel portion of it. So he's one of the people behind why there's so much performance games in ASP.NET. That wouldn't have happened previously at Microsoft.
No, it's not open source.
So it's cool that a Brit, Ben Adams, is helping out, contributing, and is, I think, they're jostling for first and second place of contributors to Kestrel. So he's like nearly the top. He doesn't even work for Microsoft. Yeah. He's nearly, I think he is at some points, he's got more commits than Microsoft
that's
people.
That's proper open source going on there.
It's really good. It's really cool. So they're building that platform. He's helping build that platform along with all the other open source.NET people, which is cool. But I just thought I would show a little bit about ASP.NET Core.
Okay.
Just to show you how, I guess, how some of those speed increases are coming about, really. So I'm just going to open up Visual Studio 2015. And I will create a new web application file. Oops. Project.
I still get upset slightly that you've got the grey theme of Visual Studio.
I know.
It troubles me a little bit.
I'm on web application 50 today. Oh, this is good.
Yeah.
I always like a nice round number. I'm going to choose an empty ASP.NET 5 template. You'll know from previous version of ASP.NET that empty doesn't always mean empty.
No, it doesn't.
Empty is quite empty.
There's various levels of empty. There's varying degrees of empty, depending on how it...
As we've gone through the levels of beta of ASP.NET dot and core, it's got less empty.
Yeah.
It started off very empty, and now it's quite empty,
but it's still not really empty.
It's still a very loose term.
It's definitely emptier than, and it's certainly emptier than 4.6, because that's not empty at all.
No.
That's quite full.
It's got loads of stuff in it.
But. In fact, that's got maybe more stuff than the normal template. But yeah, anyway, so varying levels of emptiness.
Okay, so I've got this, I've created a file new empty project. It's got some stuff in it, including this startup.css, CSS? It's not startup.
That'd be an interesting technology choice, wouldn't it?
Startup.
Let's use CSS to start up our project.
Startup.cs, C# file. And I'll go into that. And here we have, in this file, the kind of some core concepts that we're going to need to worry about in ASP.NET.
Worry
about? Yeah, worry about. I'm a developer. I always worry. We have to think about some concepts which are different.
Yeah.
Now, if you've done any OIN stuff before, then some of this might be more familiar to you. But
so
if
you might have been thinking, "Ah, that's OIN uses it," because I kind of looked at that once and got quite scared, and then just moved away.
Yeah, and it looks similar to this.
It didn't exist.
But if you're coming from ASP.NET or previous version or a completely different platform, then this will all be new to you.
Yeah.
What we have in here, I mean, the first thing that we should probably note is that we have this public static void main.
Right.
And that is, this means that this is basically your application is almost like a console application.
Yeah.
So when this is booted, it goes into the void main, like all other .NET applications or console, like a console application would go into the void main.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of sends that startup to a, to basically bootstrap your application, your web application. So webapplication.run startup. Ultimately, that's going to end up starting up the application. And in here, we've got a few methods. We've got configure services and the configure function. And really, this configure thing is configuring the pipeline of your application,
okay,
really. And in this particular example, we've got use IIS platform handler. We'll ignore that for the moment, but I'll come back to explain what that one means. But imagine this is purely empty now, and we have app.run, async, context, await, context.response, write async, hello world.
Hello world, excellent.
So
you always know it's a good starter project.
Webhack Wednesday. Hello, Webhack Wednesday.
Okay.
So now when we start this application in IIS Express, what's hopefully going to happen? Is that the application is going to say, hello, Webhack Wednesday. And it doesn't matter what I pass in here. It's always going to respond that.
Right.
Because my pipeline just does that. It's a pretty useless application in that it just responds with, hello, Webhack Wednesday.
So none of the routing or any of that stuff that matters, it's not activated.
Well, no, you've not got MVC in here at the moment. Yeah. We've not got anything in the way of that response.
So all this can do is write, hello, Webhack.
But it will be fast,
really
fast, because we're not going through any pipelines. They're not going through anything else, really. It's pretty much the request coming into the server, and then there's a little bit of jiggery-pokery around getting the request to actual ASP.NET Core. But fundamentally, we're getting straight into this response, and we're responding with hello, Webhack Wednesdays. So there is some magic which glues the actual request and response together, but we'll ignore that for the moment. Just imagine that user code is coming straight into our application, and then we're responding directly.
Okay.
This will be really fast. If you try to, if you create an application, this could handle a lot of load.
Yep.
If your website only requires a response of hello, Webhack Wednesdays, if that's your business requirement, you're in for a good luck, because this is going to be very, very fast. You couldn't get this level of kind of you couldn't do this in previous versions of .NET. No. You couldn't get to this bare metal.
There was a lot of stuff in there that had to happen for you to even get to this point.
There was stuff in the pipeline that you weren't in control of and you couldn't remove.
And even if you weren't using it, it's still there.
Yeah, it goes in this black box of system.web and you don't really know what it's doing. In the new version, it's kind of just really clean.
So I'm glad that I can do this now. I can write Hello World really fast.
Yeah, exactly. Really fast way. But you might want to have a little bit more web.
Yeah, there's more to it. Hopefully there is. Hopefully this isn't.
Don't worry, this is not the end goal. So if I go to www.root and I add something, so I'm going to add an existing item. I'm going to just add a picture. It's this particular picture, which I took in Glasgow.
Okay.
Glasgow.jpg. Now, if I start the application, if I was using this application, you would expect I would be able to go, okay, I've just added it to www.root. Yep, that's also a new concept in ASP.NET 5 as well, www.root. This is www.root. It can be configured, but that particular folder name is a convention, meaning the place where all the static files are going to be served.
Yep.
So www.root, I put glasgow.jpg in www.root.
Yeah.
So you'd expect to go to the main URL of the page,
/glasgow.jpg.
Yeah. Not /www.root, /glasgow.jpg. It's actually www.root is the root of all your static
files. And that's a convention that's been around the web for years and years and years, really. It just hasn't been in ASP.NET.
It means exactly. So we've got all of the things like your controllers and your models, they all sit outside of www.root. And if you compile, and basically www.root is meant to contain all of the static files, and people should be able to browse those files and stuff. So let's say I've got glasgow.jpg, but my application, if I go glasgow.jpg, it's still responding Hello Web Hack Wednesdays because...
It's very nice of it to keep saying hello.
But even though I've requested an image, which does exist on disk, it's ignoring that, and it's ignoring that because it doesn't know how to serve a static file.
Right.
Because all it knows how to do is tell me Hello Web Hack Wednesdays.
Okay.
So I need to tell it how to deal with static files. So I'm going to say app.useStaticFiles.
So this use static files, is this something that's kind of built in? Like, oh, if you had to get some NuGet packages to enable that?
Well, you'll see it's got a red underlined squiggly. So it's not built into the framework. It's a use static files. The ability to handle static files is added as a NuGet package.
So we're even at that really basic level of kind of like the sort of almost the most basic thing a web server can do, even that is a NuGet thing.
I guess, we're not dealing with a web server, remember, here. We're dealing with our application. Yeah. So our application's understanding of how to deal with images and so forth isn't implemented directly. So we're going to have to add this, and we're going to have to use a NuGet package to deal with. We could write our own little piece of middleware there. Rather than to do an async response, we could go to the file system. We could look at the file system. We could see if it exists, and then we're not going
to
do that.
Why write code when you don't have to? That's my motto.
So what we're going to do is we're going to use this NuGet package called useStaticFiles. It's red underlined, and in ASP.NET Core, when you're using kind of Visual Studio at least, it knows that useStaticFiles is a commonly used thing that you're going to be wanting to use. So it comes up with this little helper which says add package Microsoft ASP.NET.staticfiles 1.0.0-rc1-final, which is the NuGet package, which is going to teach it how to use static files.
Presumably, as things progress, that will get updated to be the right version for the current version of the framework.
That's right. So I'm going to go and add that package. And what it will do is over there, you might have missed it, but there was a little yellow box which said it was restoring that thing. And now all of a sudden, my use static files is now no longer red.
Okay.
If you actually go to project.json, which is the file, which describes your project, you've got a number of dependencies in there, and now we've added this new one, which is here, microsoft.asp.net.staticfiles.
Okay.
So
rather than using that helper in the previous file, I could have just gone into there and added it there as well to do the same thing, rather than using the light bulb.
Yeah, we could have just added it in the light bulb, and then we'd have also had to add it up here as well.
Okay.
It was an extension method, so it worked fine. But it's that thing is basically now coming from a NuGet package, it's understood. So now we've got useStaticFiles. It's important that useStaticFiles is ahead of app.run because every sort of piece of middleware, we call these middleware, not Middle Earth, every piece of middleware effectively runs in order.
Right.
So imagine this is your request like pipeline,
yep.
and you're setting up your pipeline. So as soon as a request comes into this application, the first module that's going to get hold of it, the first piece of middleware, which is going to hold it, is static files.
Yep.
So it's going to interrogate, I imagine, this use static files, interrogates the request, it looks at the URL, it goes to the disk, it finds, is the object there in the disk? If it is, it returns it.
Yep.
If it's not, it will pass it on to the next module. And the next module will, at the moment, just run async and say hello, web pipeline.
It's a bit like the root files in the way that they have to be in the right order for the roots to be handled.
In old money, I guess.
Yeah.
But the roots are still a concept, so that's part of the MVC middleware, which we'll come to later. So we've got app.usestaticfiles, then it's going to run async. So now, when I do this and run this application up, and I go to Glasgow, glasgow.jpg, I now get a picture which I took in Glasgow.
Is that what Glasgow looks like?
No, but that is my hotel room in Glasgow, and they had a Tunnicks caramel bar.
That's amazing.
And if you don't know what a Tunnicks caramel bar is, you have never lived.
No.
They are the finest chocolate bar. Well, one of the finest chocolate bars.
Yeah, I agree. No, they are the finest. I think.
Glasgow, Scotland does a lot of things right. They do chocolate really well,
yeah.
and they do and chocolate bars and snacks,
yeah.
like unhealthy snacks generally.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
One of my favorite being Scotch salad.
Scotch salad.
Yeah, plate of chips. And also Iron Brew.
Yes, Iron Brew, yeah, of course.
We discovered they do diet Iron Brew as well, which you don't get so much in
weird.
England. But,
so, I mean, it's impressive stuff, Martin. Yeah, so far, we've got a very polite website that says hello, and we've shown a picture of a chocolate bar.
Yeah, and see, if I type in anything else other than glasgow.jpg, I'm still getting hello Webpack Wednesday. So it's following that pipeline, and it's working, which is great. But it's not MVC, is it?
No, I mean, it's good, but it's not that good.
It's good, but it's not great.
No.
So, there's another thing as well, which you might, when we were talking about in the performance talk, you were talking about adding headers.
Yeah.
Now, you might want to, if you've got this use static files thing, you might want to pass over a few options to that. So I'm just going to just do a little snippet there. And, I just need to resolve.
So it's snippet magic there, something that a technology that continues to elude me.
Yeah, so I've got the same thing, app.usestaticfiles, but I'm passing over a static files options. And this particular middleware can be customized. So I can say on prepare response, r.context.response.headers.add expires.
Ah.
And I'm basically adding an expires header.
That's good.
In a really sort of cheap and nasty way, I'm
but
adding expires
header. But it's good because that's really important for performance.
Yes, it is. In front end performance,
yeah.
So we use that on the website that we do for MS Web Days.
Yeah.
So because I wanted to get really good on YSLOW, like we discussed in our performance talk, in Performance Webpack Wednesday. This is just a way of customizing that middleware. You could probably write a piece of middleware if you wanted to, which added a lot of the performance things in that we've talked about.
I'm sure. And again, the great thing about it being open source and community based is that somebody may well be doing that.
Yeah, someone like me may well be doing something like that, or looking at that at least.
Yeah.
You can customize these middlewares as well. They are add your own. You could fork one of these. All of them are open source.
Yeah.
So you could look at exactly what useStaticFiles does and make it more efficient for your particular usage or whatever, which is quite good. So let's just think about having now adding MVC to the mix. So I'm just going to add another little snippet. I'm going to add use MVC.
It just feels like voodoo whenever you do that. Like
we should do a Webpack Wednesdays on how to do snippet management.
I have tried it before, and it just doesn't seem to ever work properly for me.
So I'm going to do the same here. I'm using MVC. I'm going to add a package, Microsoft ASP.NET MVC Core 6.0.0.0-src1-final. Easy for me to say.
Snappy name.
It's pretty snappy. Now, you'll note one of the things which is quite nice is it feels very MVC. When you previously, if you've used MVC before, you will have defined your roots in, I can't remember where it is now.
Root config, I think it is. Something like that.
There's a place in app data where you would put your roots in. You can configure it here. So here I'm passing in the roots. So I've got one simple root here, the default root.
Yep.
It's got a controller called home, an index, an ID. So we've got MVC added in there. MVC is slightly more complex in that it needs some services to be configured before it runs.
Okay.
So all I'm going to do now is add the MVC services. So I'm just going to services dot add MVC. Oops. See, what is wrong with my typing? Nothing. So I'm going to add the NuGet package for to the services, the support for that.
Okay.
Hopefully that will resolve. Yes. So now I've got a services which have been added. I've added my my MVC. It's got a default route. It's going to look for a controller called home, which doesn't exist. So I'm just going to add that to my application. So I'm just going to create a new folder. New folder. I'm just going to call that controllers. I'm just going to add a new item, a busy controller, it's home controller, and my controller's in there. Now I'm just going to add a view for this. So add views, and it's a home controller, so I'm going to add a folder called home.
Could you've clicked on the index action there and done it that way, or
new item? I'm going to add a MVC player called index. So could I have done what?
So in older versions of MVC, you could, if you go back to the controller.
Yep.
You can right click on index.
Right.
And do add view.
Where's this?
No, not there. Okay. No is the answer to that question.
No, yeah, and I didn't know that was there before.
Is that under quick actions, maybe? What's under the quick actions menu?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, that's maybe something that's coming, or maybe not. You know, maybe that's something we're just not going to get.
Exactly. Who knows? So I'm just going to add in my view. I'm not going to use any of the templating or anything which you get. I'm just going to add some
maybe
HTML.
Go old school.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to put in a body which says, what is this? I didn't mean to do that. Sorry. We'll just leave it like that.
That's okay. You don't need to apologize.
Okay. And then I'll just get.
I wasn't offended.
Look. I made a view. Okay.
I mean, again, the sort of standard here is.
It's a really, I mean, it's a really likely web application.
Yeah.
So now I've got the application. See, I don't know. Let's run it. I think I've done everything I need to do.
Yeah, well, we'll find out in a second.
So hopefully the MVC should kick into my application. It should route it to the controller. The controller then returns the view, and I'll look, I've made a view.
Yeah.
And then everything else which is in MVC is pretty much the same as standard MVC.
Yeah.
As the current MVC you use today, there's not that many differences. Yeah. Razor's been updated quite a lot. You can do new things with Razor's, like tag helpers and that stuff, which we won't touch on today. But there's lots of niceties that you can do in there.
I mean, a lot of I found in the work I've done with .NET Core is that actually once you're into writing code, there's not. It's kind of a lot the same as previous versions. It's all the stuff that goes around it that's quite different.
This is kind of the biggest concept is this startup file
and
set way, doing your pipeline. So we can add other stuff in here as well.
Okay.
So we've added a basic piece of basic middleware. There's this other middle piece of middleware called Use IS Platform Handler that I added, and then I should call app.use IS Platform Handler. This was in all of the templates, including the empty template. And what that does is the way the ASP.NET Core works when it's attached to IIS is it's implemented as a HTTP module on IIS.
Right.
So that it's not, IIS doesn't really know how to deal with the requests. What it does is it just proxies the requests back to your application, actually to another server called Kestrel. Right. You might hear that name popping up a few times. So it does a reverse proxy, and it's set up like a HTTP module. This IIS platform handler entry point is a way that you can configure that module.
Right.
Don't need to worry about it. Okay. Just leave it there until you ever need it.
Okay.
But just know that that's what it's doing. The way that it's bootstrapped, the way these applications run on IIS is that they use a platform handler.
Okay.
So you have that there to do that. Let's say we want to add another piece of middleware. There's a nice piece of middleware.
I thought that I was amazed by just that middleware. Like,
well, being able to serve images and then.
I mean, think of what we've done. We've done hello, images, and I made a view. I mean, this is a hell of a way.
Yeah, we've got back to the basics of how we do our regular web events. So I'm going to add something which is maybe a little bit more interesting anyway. I'm going to add Glimpse. Now, Glimpse has been around for a while, and you can use it in regular ASP.NET today. Yeah. But they've added, or they've created a pre-release version. So I've went to NuGet, and I've ticked include pre-releases. Okay. So I've got a pre-release version of Glimpse, which I'm going to install in this application. Okay. And once I've got Glimpse installed, then I can go to my startup.cs file, and I'm going to add it to my pipeline.
So it's a way to find out kind of which bits are middleware and which bits are just regular NuGet packages. Like if you're looking for specifically for middleware components, how would you find out that Glimpse is a middleware component? Is that just the magic of being an ASP.NET developer?
I don't know. I guess you wouldn't be adding someone to tell you about a piece of middleware like Glimpse.
Yeah.
You go and add it. I don't know. There's no naming convention. I mean, that was just called Glimpse. Yeah. You didn't know it was middleware. So no, not really.
No, okay. Yeah, just figure it out.
Yeah, so someone will tell you that if there is a naming convention for NuGet packages, which are middleware, I don't know it and I haven't noticed it. So,
okay, fine.
But yeah, so I know that Glimpse is a piece of middleware, so I'm going to say use Glimpse. And then it requires some services like MVC does, so I'm just going to add that as well. So services dot, what's the thing now? Add Glimpse. Add Glimpse. Oops, it's possibly going to require me to actually add a using Glimpse into the top. So Glimpse is now set up in my pipeline. And what this should do now is Glimpse is good for performance. It tells you the whole kind of performance diagnostics of the request and all of the different things. So here it tells me that the HTTP request took 111 milliseconds. 40 milliseconds was that was the network, 10 milliseconds that was the server, and 63 milliseconds was the client. It shows me.
Hold on a sec. So the network, and you're on a local host here. So that's just the Windows network stack is slower than the actual server itself.
According to this, I guess I don't really know the ins and outs of this stuff, and exactly to know what it's saying. But it's fast. It's pretty fast. Even in this little simple scenario, it's responding very fast in terms of the number of milliseconds it's taken. So we've also got information about the controller, how long the controller took to respond. Bear in mind, the controller's doing nothing in this instance, really. Well, not very much. And if I had any Ajax seems quite old school to call it Ajax, but any like JavaScript client stuff, it can monitor that and tell me the performance of that stuff as well. Yeah. So Glimpse gives you a kind of full 360 view of your performance characteristics for your applications.
Yeah.
And you just add it into your ASP.NET core application as a piece of middleware.
Yeah.
And then it just can attach itself to the requests and work through that as well. So it's very clever how that stuff works. And what I expect you'll be finding is that lots more people will be creating middleware, which become then real commonplace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the one last thing I would show you is that sometimes like something like Glimpse, now I wouldn't want to just keep it in my, this is fine for development purposes, but I wouldn't want this to go out into production. I don't want everyone to know my performance characteristics of my app.
Of course,
So what we can do is we can put a statement to determine whether or not we are in development mode. So if I say .env dot is, oops, the reason I'm getting that error is because env isn't declared yet. Now, there's a thing called dependency injection built into ASP.NET Core. And if I want to get some information about my hosting environment, the environment which the application is running at runtime, I can add this particular property to the configure thing, hosting envi, my hosting environment, and then just call it env. Oops.
Nenv.
Env. That's what I was wanting to call it. So I can just say env dot is development. And there's a few which you can see. Is development is a particular type of environment. Is production is staging. So I'm just going to say is development. And then, so only when this application is development in development mode, add that to the pipeline. Okay. So Glimpse isn't going to be put out into my production. Yeah. And this works. By the way, it checks the environment variable for a keyword development. So you can customize that inside of, if I go into my properties of my application and look at the build, the debug section, you'll see there's an environment variable, hosting environment. It's currently set to development. I'm running, so I can't edit it, but you would be able to edit that and change that to production and staging or whatnot. So you can control what's added to the startup.cs file. So now Glimpse will only be added when I'm in development mode, not all the time. Now, if you want to have a look at a more complicated pipeline, because this is the empty one is pretty empty, and I create a new project and go to web, ASP.NET Web Applications, create a new one. I just don't want to save that. Fine. And I choose the web application template as my ASP.NET 5 template. Press OK. It's going to create that thing.
So this is something that I find quite a lot with ASP.NET, is that the empty one's a good way to learn. So with Gulp is another good example. Start with an empty one, and then once you've got your head around it, have a look at what comes with the templates, and you'll find a more complete, more real-world example.
Yeah. I mean, the starter project is far from a real website in all intents and purposes. It's still, but it has all of the kind of base plumbing that you'd need to add to get it up and started. So yeah, it's a better thing to start from. So you'll see that we have a config services where we're configuring things like entity framework, identity. It's adding MVC. It's adding services.addTransientEmailSender and addTransientISSMSServer. These are dependency injections.
Yeah.
So it's declaring if in my application I ever add one of these to a method and it doesn't know what to do with it, it will create one of these things.
Yeah.
This is the dependency injection. It's how you would customize dependency injection. But then we go to the configure section, and you'll see we've got a logger factory, add console thing. We've got, if it's in development mode, we're going to add browser link.
Right.
We're going to add developer exception pages, because they're not implemented in standard. We're going to add database error pages, so if there's errors in your database. Else, it's going to use a nice error message if it's in production. And it's customizing more complicated things for us.
Of course, this will work across all platforms as well. That's the great thing about it. So a lot of this stuff used to be in web config. So you'd configure a lot of this stuff in web config. But now, because we're cross-platform, we can't really do that. That's an IIS thing.
Yeah.
And so this seems like a really nice, clean way to kind of
customize
you can code
that.
Your config in a way. Yeah.
And you can pick and choose what you use. And this is how you get those speeds. So that's kind of in a nutshell, roughly, how ASP.NET Core hangs together and how it handles requests and what middleware is.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's it for another. Oh no, that's us for another Webpack Wednesday. Join us next week for another web topic. See you then.